Omaha Public Radio presents a special program on Noon Forum. We'll hear the annual Lunch for the Girls Luncheon, sponsored by Girls Incorporated of Omaha. The featured speakers will be former first daughters, Barbara Bush and Jenna Bush Hager, the twin daughters of former United States President George W. Bush and First Lady Laura Bush. They'll be heard in conversation with Angel Martin, the director of the Catherine Fletcher Center. Barbara Bush is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Global Health Corps, a nonprofit organization for health equity. Jenna Bush Hager is a contributing correspondent on NBC's Today Show, editor-at-large for Southern Living magazine, and author of Anna's Story, A Journey of Hope. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, October 29, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Girls Incorporated of Omaha, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Girls Incorporated alumna, Antiana Valentine.
Ms. Angel Martin was a teen program specialist when I was a teen at the Girls Inc. Center, and now she's the director of the North Omaha Catherine Fletcher Center. She earned her Master's of Arts in Communications from the University of Nebraska at Omaha in 2012. Ms. Angel wears many hats in the Omaha community, including award-winning journalist, instructor, mentor, daughter, sister, and most recently, auntie. Today, she wears a hat of a moderator. Welcome, Ms. Angel.
Thank you, Antiana. When Antiana was in Washington, D.C. in 2005, she and the other girls had the opportunity of a lifetime to hear a sitting president speak. They heard President George W. Bush address the National Convention of the NAACP. Yes, he was president of the United States, but more importantly, for us here today, he was the father of Barbara Bush and Jenna Bush Hager. Our luncheon guests are daughters of a president, but they are both most certainly strong, smart, and bold women in their own right. Barbara Bush is CEO and co-founder of Global Health Corps, mobilizing a global community of young leaders to build the movement for health equity. Before joining GHC, Barbara worked in educational programming at the Smithsonian Institute's Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum. She has worked for Red Cross Children's Hospital in South Africa and interned for UNICEF in Botswana. She has traveled with the UN World Food Program. She is a member of UNICEF's Next Generation Steering Committee and is on the board of directors of Covenant House International, PSI, Friends of the Global Fight for AIDS, TB, and Malaria, and the UN Social Entrepreneurship Council. Barbara was named one of Glamour Magazine's Women of the Year in 2011 and one of Newsweek's Women of Impact in 2013. She graduated from Yale University with a degree in humanities in 2004. Jenna Bush Hager is a contributing correspondent on NBC Today Show and an editor-at-large for the Southern Living magazine. She is the author of the New York Times best-selling Anna's Story, A Journey of Hope, and co-author of the children's book Read All About It. Jenna is involved with UNICEF and is currently the chair of its Next Generation Initiative, which is dedicated to reducing childhood deaths around the world. Jenna holds a bachelor's degree in English from the University of Texas, Austin. In 2008, she married Henry Hager, and April 13, 2013, she gave birth to her daughter, Marguerite Lauren Mila. Please join me in welcoming Barbara Bush and Jenna Bush Hager to the stage.
Hi, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Angel.
You're welcome.
This is a hard group to follow. We feel pretty intimidated by already listening to these amazing young women, but we'll try to do our best.
You guys will do just fine. So let's get comfortable here.
Okay.
And start this conversation.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Give us the tough questions, Angel.
All right. The tough question. So we all want to know. We've had the opportunity to watch, as you've seen today, many of our girls grow up and become strong, smart, and bold young women. But when your father is the 41st president of the United States of America, I can only imagine the ups and the downs of living at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. What was it like to be first daughters?
Well, luckily, we were in college when our dad was elected, which those of you that have gone to college or in college know it's a pretty selfish time. You're learning what you want to be. You're studying. You're making friends. You're navigating the worlds of the 20s. So, which was good because we could kind of ignore what was going on and live our own lives. We really wanted to be normal college kids because it's hard for people to believe, but had a very normal childhood. And so that was pretty great. We never lived in the White House, although we got to visit, which, believe me, it has its perks. And I think, you know, what was really great, and Barbara can elaborate on this, is that our parents were very generous in bringing us along. Mm-hmm. So we were witness to PEPFAR, for example, being unveiled in Africa. And this wasn't, you know, like a trip, a vacation to Africa. We were sitting. I had an experience where I was sitting in a circle of women who were infected with HIV/AIDS with my mom and listened to each of them tell their stories. And to be 19 or 20 or 21 years old, we went several times, and witness that, it changed our lives. It changed definitely the trajectory of our careers. Barbara has now started this amazing Global Health Corps, which I rave about as a proud sister and as somebody that wants all women to have access to what Barbara started. So I think Barbara can tell a little bit more about how that was probably the biggest blessing, was that we had these amazing travels that really opened our eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, growing up, our parents certainly let us know that we were welcome in any of their meetings or welcome to travel with them. So we both got to travel around the world. And I think also, even though it sounds funny, we did grow up very normal. We also knew what we were getting into because my dad had been the son of a president too. And yet when we were little, I thought everyone's grandfather was president. I didn't know. When we were in first grade, we went to my grandfather's inauguration, and I remember talking to my friends and being like, so, you know, when's your grandfather's inauguration?
Right.
And we just were raised very much that, you know, that wasn't anything different than anyone else's grandparents. And so we had a very normal life, but knew what we were getting into when our dad was running for president. And because of that, I think we knew that we could take advantage of such a great opportunity and travel around the world and get exposed to people that were serving in whatever they were excited about. Wendy Kopp, who founded Teach for America, is one of both of our heroes, and Teach for America is a model for the organization that I run. We both got to meet her when we were, you know, 21 years old, and so when you're thinking about what your career could be and getting to have all these incredible role models, I think it certainly allowed us to be pretty audacious around the issues that we wanted to work on, and having really amazing people in front of us that were using their time to really move the needle on what they care about.
Okay. You gave advice to sisters to two sisters, to Sasha and Malia, when they first moved into the White House. Can you share a few of those highlights with us? We won't tell anyone.
You won't tell anybody? Okay. Whoever's videotaping, turn it off. This is top secret. I'm just kidding. That was so fun for us. I was teaching in West Baltimore at a public boarding school. For whoever, you just said you wanted to start the boarding school. I'm in. Find me afterwards. I was teaching at the Seed School of Maryland, which is an incredible school. I don't know if you've seen Waiting for Superman, but it was one of the schools highlighted in that documentary. And so we drove up to D.C. I think Barbara flew in from New York. And we got to spend time when my mom invited Mrs. Obama to come show her the White House and the girls. And, you know, we could relate with their, even though we were a little older, it's a hard and wonderful time. You know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to know that you're jumping into this position. And especially since they were so young, you know, none of us had the power. You know, my dad told us that he was running for president, and Barbara and I both cried. He tells the story that we both cried, and then we said, well, fine, you can't win anyway. Really?
I don't remember that. I swear we didn't say that.
I might have said it.
You might have said it.
I'll be honest. But nothing like girls to tell the dad how it really is.
Right.
So, you know, that we wanted to meet with them, and we got to show them the rooms. We showed them, this is the top secret part, how to slide down the banisters, which at 26 we still were doing. And, you know, we got to, but then we wrote in the Wall Street Journal, too, just about the privilege of being living history. I mean, it's such an incredible responsibility and a privilege, and Barbara can tell some of those pieces of advice. You can talk maybe about going to the baseball game. Yeah, because that's what you wrote about. You don't remember?
I do. I just might cry. I'm dangling by an emotional thread sometimes.
We cried in every single one of these speakers.
So. Every girl that got up here just started sobbing.
But we're with a lot of women, so you feel us. Some hormonal things maybe going on. No?
Could be. I don't know.
All right. I just had a baby. I use the excuse, I just had a baby and she's 18 months old. But everything, I'm like, oh, I want my baby to be as strong as those women. Dads do matter.
They do matter.
They do.
And we had an awesome dad.
Yeah.
But one thing is we were little when our grandfather was president, and so we were the same age as Sasha and Malia when we were showing them around. And so we do have all these wonderful memories of one time we were campaigning with my grandfather when we were in kindergarten, and it was Halloween. And so we wore our Halloween costume and trick-or-treated up and down the aisle of Air Force One, which, needless to say, like, you
Nobody
know, we got, like,
anything.
Four certs and a few nickels. Yeah. Like, it wasn't a really successful Halloween. But we remember just playing there, and so it was fun to be with them and seeing, you know, their eyes were lighting up at just, like, the yard that you get to play in and how magical it is. But I did have this experience where I was so lucky when I went to Yale. It was near New York City, and it was after 9/11, and my dad, I'm going to cry, probably. It's okay. My dad was coming to New York, and it was the same week as 9/11, and it was so tense, and everyone was so nervous, and there was a World Series game, and I went to watch, and I just remember there was all... There was, everyone was so nervous about getting together in a stadium in New York City.
It was at the Yankee Stadium.
So, of course, there was all this speculation of should we even gather, you know, do people, no one was really comfortable and everyone was nervous about what could happen. And so I ended up going from New Haven to New York for that game, and I just remember watching, and my dad went to throw out the first pitch and he just, like, so confidently walked out and threw an amazing pitch, and everyone sort of breathed for the first time that week, I feel like. And it was just so amazing to witness that. And
and so our advice, and, you know, Barbara wrote about that moment, is when your parents ask you to go somewhere, go. Because to be able to, you know, have those experiences. And I think that the Obama girls, are doing that. You know, they get to travel around the world at such a young age. So I can't wait to see what they do as adults.
Yeah, and they're so cute also. Like, we're just big fans. And they probably don't need our advice anyway.
Yeah, but really it was just advice on the privilege that this small sorority of a lot of girls have gotten to experience. Yeah. And so really it's an experience that everybody can take, which is when you have the opportunity to do something, do it.
Barbara, you do a lot of work with health education, mm-hmm. as you said, both nationally and internationally. Why is this work important to you, and how can girls and people in the room continue to make a difference in this area?
Very good question. So I run an organization called Global Health Corps, and it was based on the Teach for America model, but applied to global health. So what we do is competitively recruit young leaders to serve in poor communities solving global health challenges. And we work in the United States, in Newark, Boston, D.C., and New York, because as we all know, global health issues affect the United States, as we're certainly seeing now, local is global and global is local with Ebola. And we also work in East and Southern Africa. And I got involved in health, as Jenna mentioned, from getting to witness PEPFAR, which is the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It was being launched. And at that time, AIDS was a death sentence. And this program would provide free drugs to people that were HIV positive in developing countries. And for me, on that trip, I was 28 years old, and we landed, and there were hundreds of people waiting in the street for drugs that we had had in the United States for 10 years. And I just as a, you know, idealistic 20-year-old, I couldn't believe the lack of justice in that, that we had had, if you were born in the United States, you could get drugs and live. If you were born in Uganda, you couldn't. And it really just depended on where you were born.
Yeah, Sissy.
Thanks, Sissy. So I became obsessed with working on global health issues and the fact that, you know, we do have drugs for HIV, something that was a crisis not that long ago. And I mean, you look at any health issues now, we have the medical know-how and the technology and science to solve most health challenges. And what we're doing is bringing great talent and new creativity to solve these challenges. And so I became obsessed with global health issues. And what we've seen is thousands of young people want to work on these issues. So we're sort of building the next generation of global health leaders. We added 130 new fellows this year, and 11,000 applications came in for those 130 positions.
Wow.
So there is, it's amazing that people are desperate to work on issues that need more solutions. And I think what sort of our hope is that, first of all, we can solve most of the health issues that exist, and people can live can live a healthy, dignified life because they have access to the treatment that they need and the decisions that they want to make. But our hope also is that in 10 years, it's our Global Health Corps alums that are, solving, running the CDC, running the Gates Foundation. One of our alums stood up at training. She's Nigerian, and she said, it's going to be so convenient when I am the Minister of Health in Nigeria, and Celine is the Minister of Health in Rwanda, and Diego is running the Gates Foundation, because we're all going to know each other, and we all have a shared vision for what health could look like. And I love that story mainly because Adana did her Global Health Corps Fellowship in Newark, New Jersey, and when she completed it, she enrolled to get her PhD at Harvard, and it's being paid for by the Minister of Health in Nigeria right now with the stipulation that she return back to the country. So she's on that track.
Woo!
Very nice. We appreciate the work that you guys are doing. Jenna, you taught at a school, and in 2008, you co-wrote a book with your mother.
Yes.
Read All About It. Mm-hmm. To encourage children to read, why is literacy an important issue to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, education is an important issue to me. I was a teacher in inner city D.C. at a public charter school called Elsie Whitlow Stokes Freedom Public Charter School, which was a very long name, but a terrific school. And then I also taught at the Seed School of Maryland, and I loved it. I love education. I miss it. My husband knows, and everybody that knows me well knows, that I'm happiest in the classroom. So I think it's something I will return to in some form soon, someday. And I think what I love about education is that it has the ability to absolutely transform lives. I mean, we see this with Girls, Inc. We see that this is a, and I was thinking when I was listening to some of the girls speak that, we were so lucky because I wasn't great at math. My sister missed one math problem on her SATs.
That's right.
So luckily our parents didn't compare us because we know who would come out on the short end of the stick.
Basic math.
I can do it, but I wasn't great. And there were things that I was great at, but what was amazing is that I had a dad who would sit at the kitchen table with me and help me with my math homework every night. And then when, I was in high school and I was working on pre-cal and I really needed help, I had parents that would get a tutor for me to help me. And not everybody has those means. So Girls, Inc. does exactly what parents need. And that's what I love, because as a mom now, I think about how I want the best for my daughter, starting now. And Susie Buffett, I'm sorry, y'all are lucky to have her in your community. She, very lucky. She's pushing the envelope for early childhood education. And I don't know if you've visited EduCare, but it is a terrific program. And I think about my daughter, and I loved when somebody said, all moms want the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's true. All moms want the exact same thing. And some moms don't have the choices that our mom had. So the fact that there's programs like EduCare and Girls, Inc. that are giving mothers choices that help their kids get, this great start. And, it makes me so thrilled for your community, because these are ways that you can actively help people that are living right here in your own backyard. And I love that. So that was a way off. Literacy is unbelievably important. You must be reading to your kids and your grandkids. But we know that, and that's what programs like EduCare do as well. And Girls Inc., they're teaching moms how to be moms, because I grew up with a librarian as a mother, which Barbara and I know wasn't always the most exciting role. There was a lot of shh. But she knew about the importance of reading to us and early stimulation and engaging us and singing with us. And not all moms have had that information, but just like Barbara said, it's not fair. That's not fair. And I don't want to live in a country where all moms don't have the opportunity to do what they want to do, which is have happy, healthy, and productive kids. So just like Barbara's doing with Global Health Corps, which is giving all people access to the basic rights of health, I think it's important that we start from a really young age and teaching. Our parents are our first teachers, and teaching them the best way to parent. I mean, I just think, you know, we have to live in a world that does that. So y'all are lucky because you have these programs in your community, and I'm sort of jealous. I want to move to Omaha.
We'd love to have you, so come on down. As the technology age rolls on, what Twitter topic would you like to see trending as it relates to girls becoming strong, smart, and bold?
Girls Inc.
Yeah.
Let's get it trending right now. Can everybody send a tweet? I've never done this. But right now, what's the hashtag? Do we have a hashtag, Roberta?
Strong, smart, and bold,
and Girls Inc. Sometime, like now, or if you don't have your phones, because we were talking about how it's kind of everybody's on their phones all the time and nobody's really present, but whatever. Between now and, you know, an hour from now, let's everybody send a hashtag about Girls Inc. and let's spread the message of these wonderful women that are speaking. Because we, as Barbara said, I mean, what she's doing is starting an organization that is having the next leaders in global health. And I feel like a lot of these young women could be global health.
Yeah,
fellows.
They should apply to Global Health Corps.
So let's get to tweeting about it.
Okay. Get to tweeting.
Tweet, tweet. As we all know, Election Day is next Tuesday, November 4th. What can you say to encourage everyone here today to be civically engaged and participate in the political process? And for our girls here today, simply why voting is important.
Mm-hmm. Well, voting is very important. And people always ask Barbara and I, so are you going to run for public office? And we immediately... oh.
Is that the next question?
That's what she wants to know. And the answer is always no. And we usually say it...
We're like, one, two, three.
No. We're twins, so we like to speak in sync.
Synchronized
speaking. and... But that's, you know, that is one great way to serve our country. And I think, you know, it's maybe ironic, or not that ironic, because we've witnessed politics with two people that we love very much, that we aren't interested necessarily in traditional American politics, but we are very interested in policy. And we know, obviously, that policy is decided by those that we vote for. And so it's very important to vote. And for women, it's very important to run.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of these women... I hope a lot of these women are representing us, because they would be unbelievable leaders. I think it's a little worrisome, and I'll be just totally honest, we talk about it, that, you know, there is such a bitter divide right now. It seems like a scary place to want to work. I'd be scared. And so I hope that we can unite so that we have the smartest, these girls, who are drawn to working in the field, because we do want the very best to represent us in Congress and in the Senate. So, Barbara, add on to that.
Well done?
Oh,
yeah.
Power
Wrap
to the
it
people.
Up. Yeah.
Wrap it up. Anyway.
Good answers. Barbara, how are you and your grandmother and namesake, former First Lady Barbara Bush, similar? And how are you guys different?
That is a good question. Well, first of all, she's... am I complimenting myself? I'm like, she's really cute. I think we were really lucky to grow up with very strong females in our family. And certainly my grandmother made it a point to show that, you know, you should use your voice to speak up for whatever you care about and whatever you're passionate about. And I think that my sister and I both learned from that in our own ways to sort of pursue our passions wildly and with a focus. And she taught us that a lot. Our grandmother is also, her nickname in our family, we call her Ganny, but we also call her the Enforcer. She is fiercely protective of anyone that she loves and cares about. And I think we've both been so lucky to have her as our sort of protective little mama lion. I don't know what she is. But I think we also feel equally as protective around the people in our family because, you know, there has been sort of a spotlight on people that we love. And she loves to read, and I love to read, as does my sister, and I think we learned that from her. Mm-hmm. And she is just a devotedly loving human being.
She, we call her the Enforcer, and last year, when my grandfather was sick, we all thought that he was possibly going to pass away. I mean, he was really sick. The doctors were telling us that, you know, and we love him dearly, of course. So we were supposed to go to a family Christmas trip together. We canceled the trip. We flew to go, you know, it was Christmas Eve. I was with my in-laws, and my parents said, we need to go say goodbye to Gampy. And of course, that's like, you know, my in-laws were like, is she okay? Because I was not. And so we flew to Houston to do that. And we all promised each other. We said, okay, we're not going to cry. Of course, you know, and then we cried in the car. But we're like, we're not going to cry. We're not going to cry. And so we walked in, and I was 6 months pregnant. And my grandfather touched my stomach, and he could barely talk at the time. And he said, the circle of life. I can't wait to meet this baby. And of course, I cried the minute he said life. And I thought to myself, oh, my baby will never meet him. And I felt sad for that. But my grandmother was the only one who never resigned to the fact that he was going to live. So she, every day, she would spend every day with him by his side and talk to him about all these things he had to look forward to his grandbabies, great grandbabies being born, to my dad's library opening. And she kept, everybody else thought, is Ganny crazy? I mean, he's, why does she keep doing this? And the thing is, he had no choice but to live, which I love. And it sort of speaks to her resilience. I mean, she and her persistence. I mean, she is this force to be reckoned with. And one of the things that I learned by working in HIV/AIDS is that in the 80s, when my grandmother was first lady, she spoke about HIV, and what she did was she went in to somebody that was sick with HIV, and she hugged them, and she got close to them. And we don't really remember what this is like, although maybe Ebola is bringing up memories of the misconceptions of HIV. Mm-hmm. But people at the time thought, oh, you can't hug somebody with HIV/AIDS. And she got right in bed and hugged them, and I saw those pictures later, and I thought, wow. I mean, people may know her as this, as a grandma with white hair, but she is far from that. She's that too. But she's a pretty incredible woman.
So the Enforcer, that's,
yeah,
that's mm-hmm. awesome though. That's awesome. A hug goes a long way.
Sometimes we're scared of the Enforcer. We don't want to get on the bad side of the Enforcer.
Never get on the bad side of the Enforcer.
We've both been on it.
Yep.
But if somebody else talked badly about us, no,
it's ugly.
Jenna, you're a wife, mother, writer, and television personality. What keeps you grounded?
Oh, my sister. No, I mean, nothing really keeps me grounded. I think, I'm grounded, but I think, does the word, I think I am terrific. I am bold, I am smart, and I am strong. Now, I thought you meant more like balanced, which is a question that a lot of people ask to a lot of working mothers, to all working mothers, is how do you do everything? Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just pretend you meant that. Because it's a question I ask my colleagues incessantly. Because I'm a new mom, I'm like, how do you possibly do this? It's hard. And like the one trick that I have is to be very present in wherever I am. So I used to sometimes have my phone with me when I had the, you know, my hour of precious time with my daughter, putting her down and reading her books and all of the good, wonderful stuff in life. And I sometimes found myself worried about next day's work, whatever it was, getting scripts in or whatever. And so I realized that sometimes I was applying myself to both roles at the same time, and that's never really great. So I leave my phone in the front of my apartment, and I have quality time with my babe. And I think that that's something we talked with Susie about this morning, about how a lot of people are distracted because we can be, and there's telephones around, and people want us all the time to do things. So try to kind of separate and be present in parenting is my goal for 2014 and 2015.
Okay.
Wish me luck.
Yes. Good luck. You got it. Strong, smart, and bold. You got it. Keep wearing those hats. It looks like we have some questions from our girls
awesome.
In the audience.
Yay.
So.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name, and what grade are you in?
My name is Anelia Alexander, and I am 12 years old.
Awesome.
What is it like to grow up as a twin?
Oh.
You can speak.
Well, it's amazing. We lived in the womb together for 9 months.
We're womb mates. Don't you love that cheesy pun? No. People over there did not like it.
Oh, it's a good one. It was in my wedding toast for Jenna. Whatever, well. We were womb mates. We never had any other siblings, and so we didn't know anything differently. But I think for us, there's nothing more amazing than having a twin because we had someone to go through life with. And so whenever there's sort of a daunting or scary thing ahead of you in childhood, at least you always know that you have your twin going through something quite similar at that time. And I think that's why when our parents moved to D.C., it wasn't hard for us because we had someone else that was going through it also. So we had each other's backs. It just makes things a lot more fun. We try to pretend that we're psychic, but we have yet to have a psychic
moment.
We
only had one.
We had one that involved putting salt and pepper on a piece of turkey.
We did. It was like 1, 2, 3, pepper. Anyway, that was our most brilliant moment.
That was the most.
But we do feel very, very lucky. Being a twin is really fun.
It is fun, and we have double the friends. Jenna tried to do a... when I was in college, she came to visit me at Yale, and she tried to do a semester abroad at Yale. Because we loved each other's friends, so it just made our lives a lot fuller.
Yes, they didn't allow me there. I still resent it.
Shouldn't have brought it up.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was more than you bargained for, I'm sure.
Okay. My name is Jamia, and I'm 11 years old. Miss Jenna, what inspired you to pursue a career in broadcasting, and who mentored you through the process?
That's a really good question, and it's a sort of a serendipitous story. I mean, if you had told me 10 years ago that I was going to be on the same news outlet that plastered the heinous freshman 15 pictures of Barbara and I... I don't know if you remember those days, but we sure do. All over their stations, I would have said absolutely not. I loved teaching, but I was on the Today Show for both of the books that I wrote for Honest Story and for Read All About It. And both times, the executive producer came up afterwards and said, "We'd love you. You could do this work. Have you ever thought about doing this work?" And I was like, "No." And he was very persistent, this EP. He continued to email me. And I was teaching in inner city Baltimore, and it was hard. It was really hard. And I was frustrated, and I was tired. And my husband said, "Well, maybe you should think about doing both. Maybe you could be I was a reading specialist as well. Maybe you could work part-time. You need a break. You're a little stressed." I think people don't really appreciate how hard teaching really is. And so I did, and I really love it. I mean, I feel like it's an amazing privilege to share the stories of people around our country and around our world that are making it a better place. I mean, that's how I met Susie, which is incredible, and I got to come here to Omaha and tell the stories of your communities coming together. I think I feel very lucky in this job because it gives me a voice. And I've had a lot of mentors, a lot of women mentors, and that's the other thing I was thinking is that really, mentors are so important. Barbara and I both had many in our careers, women and men, who have helped us kind of figure out which ways we want to go. And I love that you girls are getting access to that at such a young age because we know that that's one way to succeed. So
anyway, keep in touch with your mentors. And if anybody ever wants to go into journalism, give me a call. Susie has my info.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Victoria Bogard, and I'm 15 years old. Being in high school and at Girls Inc., we are taught to think about our future and still be teenagers. My question is, what advice can you give me on balancing my life as a teenager and still focus on getting into an Ivy League school?
Woo.
I want to get into Harvard.
Well done.
Well,
nice.
I'll let you talk to Barbara since she was the Ivy League graduate. If you want to go to a nice university school, give me a call. Barbara? That was directed at you, I believe.
First of all, I think it's great that you have very big goals, and I have a lot of confidence that you will be able to go to any school that you want to. I think when you're a teenager, you should just figure out what you're excited about and what you're passionate about and what you love working on or love reading about or are drawn to most. And I still feel like this. I still feel like I don't really know what I'm going to do when I grow up. But I know how scary it is to think that you have to have a path for what the rest of your life is going to look like. And the beautiful part about life is that different people and different opportunities will come in your way. And you want to be able to say yes to those and veer off your path. I was studying architecture when I was at Yale. And that's what I had big visions in my mind of being an architect in New York City designing amazing spaces. And I loved learning about that, but I'm so much happier that I was open to going into a totally different field and working in global health. It's made my life much more full and happy getting to work on huge problems and feeling like even something little can be part of a solution. And I think that my life is so much bigger because I didn't stick to my path of being an architect. And who knows, maybe one day I'll do architecture, but I think the most fun part about being in school and going to college is that you have time then to learn about anything that you're excited about, and that's a pretty great gift.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Hi, my name is Michael Shields. I'm 16 years old, and my question for you is, Ms. Barbara, I'm thinking about going into the health field after I graduate this year. What advice do you have for me?
That's awesome. Well, first of all, you should apply to Global Health Corps. Our application's open in 2 weeks. But I think working in health is amazing because you get to work with people who you can truly change the way that their lives will be pretty quickly. I was really lucky to have great mentors working in the health field. I worked when I was 22 every day with a doctor and nurse in South Africa and shadowed them and did sort of anything that they wanted me to do. And what's great is that I then just got to work with moms and kids and everyone that was in the children's hospital where I was working. And any interaction that you have with someone regarding health, anytime anyone is in a hospital or in a clinic, they're in a pretty vulnerable situation. And I think it comes pretty quickly to realize that any interaction you have with someone, if you smile at them, if you pay attention to them, if you care about them, it's at a time when they're in a sort of weak space and it can really change their day. And so, even though when I was young I didn't have a medical degree and now I've been working in global health for 10 years, I just realized that any time that you can engage in someone when they're dealing with a health crisis, it can just make their day, their life a little bit easier. And so I think that's awesome that you're trying to pursue that.
Get Barbara's information from Susie.
Susie has it.
I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard the annual Lunch for the Girls Luncheon, sponsored by Girls Incorporated of Omaha. The featured speakers were former first daughters, Barbara Bush and Jenna Bush Hager, the twin daughters of former United States President George W. Bush and First Lady Laura Bush. They were heard in conversation with Angel Martin, the director of the Katherine Fletcher Center. Barbara Bush is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Global Health Corps, a nonprofit organization for health equity. Jenna Bush Hager is a contributing correspondent on NBC's Today Show, editor-at-large for Southern Living magazine, and author of Anna's Story, A Journey of Hope. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, October 29th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Lisa Winton, Marketing and Development Specialist with Vic Gutman and Associates, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Coate, thanking you for listening.